This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, hoping to talk with Stephen Jones in just a few minutes. By the way, G-Bag Nation, they have got Mike Leslie on at 6 o'clock today, the person who posted the tweet that I believe was, what is Trayvon Diggs doing on this play where he eventually chases down and tries to get in the tackle, but I know a lot of people have varying opinions about that. And then Trayvon Diggs had lots of thoughts right after the game. So he will be on with G-Bag Nation at 6 o'clock. If you need something positive, according to ESPN research, Dak Prescott is the first Cowboys quarterback with multiple interceptions in three straight games since Troy Aikman in 1992. That is the only bit of good information I could find for you because that year the Cowboys won the Super Bowl.
So what you're saying is...
Nah, probably not.
This thing's getting ready to turn around, baby.
I mean, I hope so.
Yeah,
but then
man,
you see things like the Cowboys are running the ball on third and five on the opening drive, and you're like, I don't totally know about that. Right now, brought to you by Ford and your North Texas Ford dealers. Ford is the best in Texas. We bring to you Dallas Cowboys Executive Vice President Stephen Jones. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, guys.
Now, I know we got plenty to talk about with the game, but I was curious if you could tell us anything more about the family caravan accident, and is everybody okay?
Yeah, first of all, everybody's going to be okay. My sister and brother, a little sore, they were in the car, and, you know, unfortunately, the safety bollard that raises to protect the stadiums around the NFL deployed right as they were going over it. It was an abrupt stop and, you know, got their attention really good. And of course, they're really sore. My sister with ribs and brother his neck. But I think everybody's going to be just fine.
That is wonderful to hear. And we got to protect Charlotte at all costs, right? She is a treasure.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. She's tough, though.
I'm kind of curious from the bye week, what did you feel was the most enlightening part of the cross the hall meetings that they had during that time?
You know, I just think, you know, the biggest thing is execution, is we just got to continue to execute better. I think defensively, I think the big thing is the guys understanding, you know, what Coach Zimmer's trying to accomplish and his staff. And, you know, I think it was important that, you know, they get their hands around that. Obviously, it's hard to have the continuity when you're missing, and no excuses here, but, you know, we're missing a lot of starters on that side of the ball. And, you know, you're moving guys in and out of there trying to find the best combination. So there's definitely some inconsistency. And obviously, you know, with what we're doing right now, I mean, we're definitely we're going through some adversities. So that part's difficult. And then, you know, offensively is continue to, you know, look at, you know, trying to find our running game. I mean, that's, you know, important that we mix that in. I thought we did a good job early, and then, you know, we had the adversity there in the third quarter, and I think got away from it. And we just got to continue to grind. There's 10 football games left, a lot of football left to play, and we are going to ultimately start to get healthier. And, you know, I think we've got the right group of guys on this team that are going to continue to bust it. They showed it yesterday when they, you know, things were looking tough. And, you know, both offensively and defensively made plays in the fourth quarter to get us back in the game and, you know, a chance to win it on the last drive. Unfortunately, we just didn't execute on that last drive.
Now, obviously, I think all fan bases will be in favor of better execution from their favorite team. And I understand there is 10 games left to play, a lot of football. Is there ever a thought that goes through your mind, whether it's last night's game or you know, in between games or anything, that maybe the team just isn't good enough?
No, I mean, I just think, you know, this team's made up of a lot of the same players that won, you know, 12 games the three prior seasons. I think it's, you know, right now we're just going through adversity. You know, we've had more than our share of injuries, it feels like this year, especially on the defensive side of the ball, coupled you know, with a new staff and a new scheme. So on the defensive side, so, you know, I do think we've got really good football players. It's a matter of getting them, you know, executing together and getting after it. But no, I think we've got, you know, really good football players. And at times, you know, we've had spurts where we played well. And obviously at times we're not playing well.
I'm sure you guys will learn more as the week goes along, but do you have optimism for Micah Parsons and Deron Bland, for example, when you talk about hopefully some injured players coming back, potentially coming back this weekend?
Yeah, it's just too early to tell for this week. I mean, they're out there working as we speak, and they'll work there the first parts of the week. I mean, you want to get it to where they're practicing, and, you know, things are, you know, where they can get out there and see see how they can play and see if they're confident that they can play at the level they need to play at to have success.
Steven, I know as part of the competition committee, we've had the question, did you get an explanation on the picked up flag from the touchdown that when the two collided in the end zone?
No, we hadn't had the opportunity to get the response from the league. I mean, it was, you know, Mike said the same thing. You know, when you get two flags simultaneous, two people are seeing the same thing. So, you know, that's something that they'll certainly have an answer for, I'm sure. And but, you know, it was just explained that after looking at it, they felt like they needed to pick the flags up. So part of it.
How did you feel about Dalvin Cook getting out there? And kind of can you explain how the Rico Dowdle situation all happened?
Well, Rico just, you know, he's flu bugs going around. And unfortunately, it hit him when he woke up that morning, and it got progressively worse as the day went. And just felt like he, you know, wasn't ready to go. And we had Dalvin, who we were going with anyway, and certainly Zeke. So we were in pretty good shape there. And it was good to get Dalvin in the mix. And thought Zeke made some nice runs for us yesterday.
Now, I was curious your take on the first seven games this season of Dak Prescott specifically, because, you know, he said in the post game yesterday that second interception was as boneheaded of an interception as he's had, and he should have thrown it away. There's a lot that factors into quarterback play, of course, but what have you thought about Dak's play thus far this year?
Yeah, I mean, Dak's as fierce a competitor as there is, and of course, when you're having a season like we're having right now where we're not playing to the level that we felt like we can play, then, you know, I think all competitors push, and he's pushing to make plays, and he's obviously made some really good plays. I thought he did a great job in the fourth quarter bringing us back last night. And, you know, he's no doubt in my mind that he's going to keep this group together, and they're going to keep working to get better and better each week. We've got a lot to work on, as Coach McCarthy says, but I just feel you know, like we should just keep getting better. I mean, Dak knows what it takes to win in this league. He's done it at a high level. And, you know, right now we're going through some adversity, and we've just got to keep going to work every day.
Steven, so far this year, the third quarter is 61-19 against you guys. Do you have thoughts on why after halftime it's been such a tough quarter for the Cowboys?
No, I mean, you know, I don't have my hands around that at the moment. Obviously, that's something we'll continue to talk about. We had a really obvious to everybody, a rough third quarter last night that got us, you know, in a position where we were, you know, having to make a, you know, a fast and furious comeback there at the end. But certainly it's a place where I know the coaching staff will flag, and we've got to be better. Both sides of the ball, moving the ball as well as getting stops.
When it comes to moving the ball, obviously offensive line is going to be a big part of that. I understand Guyton and Beebe are rookies, and that takes time. Have you been surprised at all by the play of Terrence Steele this year? Because it seems like it has not been up to his standard, and he talked about what a great training camp he had. What have been your thoughts about Terrence Steele's play thus far?
Yeah, I just, you know, the offensive line, you know, at the end of the day, it's a unique group. They got to all play together. And I think right now with some of the newness we have with the two rookies, as you mentioned, Guyton and Beebe, coupled with, you know, some of the moving parts we've had, having to move Tyler out one game, Terrence, certainly just getting the group in a rhythm is the important part. I know the game means a lot to Terrence. He's a grinder, and I know he'll ultimately get it right.
Are you familiar with the incident between Trayvon Diggs and Mike Leslie yesterday? And if so, can you give us any feedback about that?
I'm not aware of that at all.
Okay, so Trayvon Diggs comes out and talks to Mike Leslie while he's still in his pads about a tweet that he sent out asking what Trayvon Diggs was doing. And he said to Mike Leslie, "You don't know ball. You can't do what I can do." Mike Leslie responds, "I'd love to talk to you about it." And Trayvon Diggs walks back into the locker room and says, "You can talk about D's nuts."
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything to say because I don't know about it firsthand and not going to comment on that.
Okay. Fair enough.
All right, Stephen, thank you very much for your time, man. We will get back with you next week.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
Go get Cowboys.
There you go. Stephen Jones right here on 105.3 The Fan.
That's a fun thing you just did.
I've been trying to do that with everything so far. It's been
like
a lot
how
of
you
fun.
Read that. I was like, and then you got to it and you said the end on what he
I
said.
Mean.
I was like, that was amazing. Stephen handled it very professionally. Yeah. You can be really mad at Stephen right now. I get it as a, you know, he puts together or helps put together the team, but you just.
I'm surprised nobody's told him about that. Like,
I think he knows about it, but
okay,
he doesn't want to comment
about
it.
Yeah,
and you know what?
That's probably true.
That is also another thing, too. Whenever you hear about something and you don't see it firsthand, that definitely you may not have a real comment on it. Like, I watched the game. I know that.
And he might be right. He might go back and watch it and think that I did not give an accurate reflection of what happened. I think I did. Mm-hmm. I wanted to give as accurate of a reenactment as I could. Look, I get it. After a loss like that,
he's a D's nuts.
I mean,
he said that to him.
I know. I just.
Well, I mean, a couple weeks ago,
is that not what happened?
Didn't Tyler Smith say that Jalen Tolbert sprained his
yes. He did.
And everybody thought it was funny then.
He
so,
did.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
I was just, because I get it. You know, you could tell, like, Stephen Jones didn't really, like, either didn't want to talk or didn't necessarily have the answers. But he did answer the questions how he saw fit. I would love better answers, but it might come down to this. We don't have better answers.
He's frustrated.
You
you can hear it in everything that he's saying. I mean, the first thing he leads off with is execution, which we've known the entire time we've interviewed him. When he goes to execution, there's a lot more to it, and he knows it. But he's like, look, that's the one thing that we can definitely, if they made the plays, all this is enough for not.
My opinion, and I get, he's so demoralized, and so are most of the Dallas Cowboys. Sure. They're not competitive in these games until you get to, the Baltimore game and this game. In the end, if you say, well, you got to play all 60 minutes. At the end, minutes 57 through 60, the end of the game, you could say they're very competitive because you're within 3 to the Ravens. You're within 6 to the 49ers, and you did get the ball back with approximately 3 minutes to go to win the game, and then you just did absolutely nothing in those final 4 plays. But when you are getting destroyed in a league where they're like every game is decided within 7 points for the most part, and those two games ended up being a 3 and 6 point loss, but it's demoralizing to get to, there's 15 minutes to go and we're down by 25. There's 15 minutes to go and you're down by 20. That's demoralizing when you're like, gosh, we have to correct like 7. There's not one play or 3 things. There's like 14 things you have to correct when you're down by 20 heading into a fourth quarter.
Yeah, and but I do see some pushback is like, how did you think he was going to answer the question? I just wanted to know if he was familiar with the incident, and he said no.
Yeah.
Because one of my follow-up questions was going to be like, is this just the level of frustration that happens when you're losing?
That's what it feels like, right? Like, usually Trayvon, like, I know he's got rabbit ears on Twitter. He's gone with Sean before. But
for the record, I loved our conversation with Trayvon Diggs in training camp last year. It was awesome.
Yeah, but like, that's when you're in this kind of place right now, you got destroyed before the bye. You knew you had an opponent that you have to try to get over somehow. Like, you've got to figure out how to get past them, and then you didn't. It's got to be a moment of frustration everywhere within that locker room. And then, you know, Diggs, his best friend on the team is Micah. And Micah can't be out there to help out in any way right now.
Yeah.
So that's got to be another part of it where you're just like, we're not even the best version of our team right now. And they know it. They know they're not. The quality is not what their standard is. You just said that Terrence Steele said it. Dak said it.
Yes.
They all have a different expectation, and they don't know how to get back to it yet.
We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, your complete overreaction to the Mavs' first two games. But also, were you able to watch on Saturday? And some big picture NBA storylines. We'll get into that next right here on The Fan.
In the open court, they're pushing the tempo here. And it's Kyrie giving go, involving Gafford back to the big man!
KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan, 877-881-1053. For anybody that wants to get involved in the discussion, by the way, I have been texting back and forth with, I think, three people who did not care for me asking Steven or giving my condensed version of the Mike Leslie Trayvon Diggs, and I've been trying to explain it to them. So I appreciate all the feedback and interaction with the show. Also on Twitch, also on YouTube. Now, I think this segment is going to mostly be about the Mavericks in these first two games. Have you made any snap decisions or early looks that you really like? But I think we need to talk some more about what we talked about in Crosstalk, because when Corey brought it up, when I looked on social media, there are a huge amount of people who have not figured out the TV situation, or Saturday night was jarring to them in terms of why the hell can't I watch the game?
Yeah, that's probably the biggest thing right now. Now, Saturday, there was a lot going on with LSU, A&M, other True. College football games, the World Series. So maybe it was like, hey, it's 9 o'clock. I'm starting to transition from the A&M game. Why can't I find this? It's I don't know. If you're a big Mavs fan, it's weird to me that you didn't get this set up before the season started, because I wanted to make sure I checked out my antenna on Monday or Tuesday before the NBA season started to make sure that I had channel 29.
So here are some of the things that we've learned thus far. By the way, tomorrow night you'll be good to go for most people because the game's on TNT against Minnesota. But tonight against Utah, I know people are concerned. So what we seem to have learned from all of our own experiences and asking people is, you, if you have DirecTV, you're good to go. That's how I watched it, just over the air.
But Sean said no.
If you do it on the DirecTV stream, then that's not going to work for you. So you have to watch it on the actual DirecTV. Now, Corey, you said it was not on Fubo, but they said essentially, give us a couple days, we're working on it.
Yeah, Mark Folliwell, he was in a conversation with a few different people on Twitter. And he said, on October 26th, Kevin,
somebody asked,
I know you and others have said that new channel 29 is available on Fubo. I still do not see it. We live in the DFW area, so I'm not sure why it wouldn't be on there. Do you have any idea? He said, the deal is done. I hear it's a technical thing that they're working on very hard to get launched on Fubo ASAP. It's going to be there, but I can't guarantee the exact moment that's going to happen. And then a guy named Bingo Ben sent his screenshot of Fubo support that said, unfortunately, KFAA isn't live yet. We do hope to launch it in the coming days. Please bear with us. I don't know why. I have no clue why, but that's going to hinder me being able to watch the Mavs game until it's done, because I have Fubo. That's the service I pay for, so, and they said that it would be there.
Here's things that really stink. And you can change this, I guess, by just buying the Mavs TV for $125.
Correct. And by the way, if you do that now, you get a pair of tickets. I still think that offer is available, or a credit to the merchandise store.
Saturday was a very busy day for family. Yes. It was homecoming, dance, all kinds of things, right? And it's just, there's a lot going on. You do not have record on an antenna. Like, it is.
I didn't even really think about
it
that.
It is
That's
what it
point.
Is. Like, you cannot pause the game because you have to go to the restroom, or you need to run to go do something. You're like, it's fine. I'll catch up, and then I'll miss, commercials. Yeah. I can just, you can't do it. So what I have now with the Mavericks is, if I do not watch it right then, right there, or if I want to go back and watch a play or watch somehow, I wouldn't want to watch a whole regular season game again, but you can't do it. You're back to 1998 or whatever. I don't know what year TiVo came out, but like, it is, if you're doing it the way I'm doing it, antenna wise, if I don't catch the game live minute by minute, I will not be able to watch the game the way that I'm at least used to watching Dallas Maverick games. I got used to having it on DirecTV, Bally's, which I guess most people hated, and I get the why. But I could always record the game, and if at 8 o'clock everything was done in the house, and then I could just be like, I'll just start it. So what, I'm 30 minutes late. By the time we get to midway through the third quarter or halftime, I'll be caught up. This is, antenna-wise, it is back to the 1990s.
And that being said, I appreciate everybody that's sitting in alternative approaches to it. I'm sticking with this. I bought this one, all right? I'm sticking with that. So okay. I don't want to have to go find an alternative one. I just want them to fix it on mine. Fix it.
What I'll be interested on Fubo is when you get it, whenever they make it available, watching on antenna, you're not going to get the clearest picture.
Yeah.
It's not fuzzy. It's good. It's fine. I would say you're watching in 720. You get used to watching things now in 4K.
That's
and
true.
Antenna is, I would assume, it's impossible to get 4K through antenna. So it is, you know, you watch that first game was on TNT. You can tell the difference in quality from watching on channel 29 antenna to watching a game on TNT or ESPN. There is a difference. Is it crazy different? No, but it is different.
Now, as far as the team itself, look, couple of things. Only second
season's
game now.
Over.
No, I'm not going to say that
it
at all.
Will be if they keep playing fine. Like that.
Yeah, everything was going just fine until they lost.
I have to admit, I thought the Suns played better than I anticipated. Now the question is going to become, how does that look over the span of an entire season when they have to deal with what feels like will be elevated
injuries?
I can't
believe Bradley Beal already missed a game. That's
yeah,
amazing.
I don't think you're that shocked by that, but what were some of y'all's takeaways from, you can include both the first two games if you want, but the Mavericks lose on Saturday evening to the Suns.
I thought their defensive effort was lackadaisical. That was the main issue. Another issue was this. Lucas scored 40. He really had to score 50. The offense did not look great.
No.
So that was a
PJ Washington.
PJ Washington was horrible.
Hardy.
It was one game, right? Hardy was, Najee Marshall did nothing. We know that Maxey's a bad offensive player. When he makes a three, that's why it's so exciting, because you're not expecting it to go in. So it's one game again. It's one game. It's one loss. It was home opening night for Phoenix. Yes, they'd played the night before, but they definitely had major energy. The Mavericks didn't. The Mavericks seemed to just kind of go through the motions at times. Defense was suspect. It's one game, but it was disappointing that it was game two of the season and it looked like your effort level had gone down.
Yeah, especially because we talk so much about how much the regular season matters and everything, and you would love to see them like start to potentially build up a cushion. So that was disappointing.
Maybe it was just a natural.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Let down after the first game. Like that's a complete possibility.
They didn't play a good team in the first game, is my concern about that. Like if they would have beaten Celtics.
But the anticipation of what's Clay gonna look like, being in front of your home team, your home court, now going on the road. Maybe it's just a first game, second game.
That's true, but Phoenix was already in a back to back. Like they were
missing Bradley Beal.
Yeah, and they had been on the road the night before. I realized it was just Los Angeles. So you didn't have to, but they were already in a back-to-back, and they look like the team more ready to go.
I hate saying this because this isn't the NBA I grew up with, and I get it. Now it's a different rules, and then there's a different level of attitude and care. When you went to go see, this is going to sound so old, man. When you went to go see Dr. J, Magic Johnson, Larry Bird, man, did they give great effort every night. And I get there are nights that they didn't, but that's why they won 60 to 64 games a year, is because they felt a responsibility to not only their coaches, their teammates, the fans, to prepare for that. They really tried hard in the regular season for the majority of games. And you just have to get used to, like, the Mavericks just might not care for 30 games this year. And they're not any different than the Phoenix Suns or whoever. It's just that players and coaches and your front office seem to say, don't try super hard in the regular season. And last night, or two nights ago, it just felt like, come on, Mavs. And then you'd see this spark, and then they're like, that was a lot of energy we just wasted in 2 minutes. Let's go back to just kind of jogging.
Does this make y'all put focus more on Phoenix and then maybe the Grizzlies as, we've talked about it, maybe Denver is going to have more struggles than anticipated, but could those two teams or whoever you think kind of rise up and maybe take their spot?
Ooh, yeah, they definitely could. Everything could go down very... No, Kevin, I think that the Mavs are going to be fine. They're going to be at the top of this thing.
Okay.
Nobody's taking their spot.
No.
In my heart.
Not taking the Mavs spot. Oh. I mean, taking Denver's spot. Oh. In terms of... No.
Okay, sorry.
No. I'm not saying anyone's going to take the Mavs spot. I'm saying if Denver has a tougher go...
Gotcha.
And it looks like they might, could it be Phoenix? Could it be the Grizzlies? Could it be whoever?
Pelicans.
That moves... I mean, maybe DeJounte Murray got hurt in the first game. That's probably not a great sign, but...
The Jazz.
Could it be...
Well, I have a lot of belief in this Maverick team come playoff time. But what Luka said about the regular season... And look, Luka, I thought, did have great effort and energy throughout that game. It was weird that his role players decided... You know what? This Phoenix crowd is really into it. It's their opening night. We don't want to put forth the effort to play great defense. We don't like scoring, shooting the ball, that can go in and out. It just happens. But I felt like the effort on defense was like, we're on the road and they seem to really want to win. Let's not try that hard.
But when we lined up the top eight teams this year, you assumed Denver was going to be there.
I figured they'd be third or fourth.
So now it looks like, hold on, can San Antonio slip in there because Denver's not starting off well?
That is true. I think of more sliding Denver into the, could they have to be in the play-in tournament? Okay. As opposed, if Denver misses the playoffs, I'll be shocked. I know that team will have some injury problems on you. I would still be shocked. So that's why I was asking, because I'm curious if there's another team that will jump out of the play-in group and like
be... It might be really jumbled up. Like the top seven seeds jumbled up because they've been taught to not care about 82 games. It's weird. But that is the mentality of almost every player in the NBA now through LeBron James. Because I don't think Kobe had that attitude. I don't think Duncan and Dirk had that attitude. The great players kind of before LeBron. LeBron took over the league and said, here's what we do. We do not care about the 82. We care about the playoffs.
That being said, I mean, I'm the shock for me because this was a play-in team last year. Look what has happened since Bronny's joined the Lakers. They're 3-0, Kevin. Like they went straight to the top. They knocked Denver off.
I swear I saw a statistic that I thought was hilarious, and it said highest scoring father-son duos in NBA history, and obviously LeBron and Bronny are number one, and I was like, that's a good bit. That is absolutely a good bit. I think these next two games should be really interesting because you already get the back-to-back for the Mavericks, maybe not tonight as much as that game against Minnesota, because you have Utah go on the road against Minnesota the next night. It'll be interesting to see kind of how they bounce back in those two games.
Let me give you a positive. I thought Klay Thompson looked good again.
Yep.
Is he done? Is he finished? It's just two games. But if you just watch these two games, you'd say, dude, he still has a quick release. He still, as if he gets an open look in rhythm, it feels like it's going in 80% of the time.
I think you'll like this then from the 972, or at least the first part of it. Early overreaction, Klay is a massive upgrade over THJ. Here's their concern. Najee Marshall and Grimes have been pretty tough so far versus Derrick Jones Jr. and Josh Green. They're 2-for-16 on the season with 4 points combined. Now, I think those two, you might be looking more at some of the defensive assets they bring to the table as well. But yeah, first two games, not so great.
Yeah, and they might just take a little longer to grow into it. You know, it might be something that takes more time for them.
Can I ask you guys some kind of across the NBA questions that aren't just Mavs-centric?
Sure.
I think we're supposed to say yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're right. I should rephrase that. I would appreciate it if you guys would engage me with these questions about the rest of the NBA.
You can try.
Oh, my God. Do you think Ja Morant and the Grizzlies specifically look poised for a bounce back season? Or is there always going to be like a little bit of hold your breath with a Ja-led team? He's an awesome
player. Second
thing
you said.
Okay.
I think they're like, you, as long as he's on the court, they're a pretty unique team.
Yes.
I actually like the Jaws, by the way, his shoes that came out recently.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that's a different story for a different time. I think they can play tough basketball, though. And it's a style that kind of irritates you if you're going in and going, this could be an easy game. It's not.
And if him and Jaren Jackson are healthy, that's probably a 50-win team.
I
the problem is both of those guys seem to miss extended amount of time throughout a season. But yeah, if they're both healthy, they compete for a top 4 seed in the Western Conference. So it's interesting. Obviously, Ja Morant, it feels like he should have gone to Texas Tech because he gets his guns up a lot. But I would say that if he's healthy and on the court, they are a good team. And then when he is hanging out with his friends, he doesn't need to be a Red Raider.
How potentially brutal of a season is this going to be for the 76ers? I know we're just starting, but you're obviously already concerned about Paul George, Joel Embiid, high expectations before all that for the 76ers. Is this going to be a giant disappointment of a season for them?
I mean, they're number 11 right now, Kevin.
Okay, beyond just those three games, I'm saying that they already have injury concerns. Joel Embiid saying, I'm not playing back-to-backs. The NBA investigating that.
You know, it's funny for Kendrick Perkins to intentionally change the narrative of MVP and get Joel Embiid one.
That was pretty impressive.
He's going to go down as one of the worst MVPs in the history of the NBA. So even though it got away from the white guy that Kendrick Perkins didn't want him winning three in a row, is in the history of the NBA 20 years from now, I think people will be asking that aren't, let's say, our age, somewhere between, let's say, 20 and 60 years old. They'll go, who was Joel Embiid? Like, if I tell somebody right now who's 15 years old about Amari Stoudemire, and I know he didn't win an MVP, I'd be like, who's Amari Stoudemire? And I'd be like, he was awesome, but his knees went out on him at like 28 years old.
Yeah.
And then Steve Nash got older and moved on, and it just completely ended. I think Joel Embiid is just going to be an afterthought in the history of the NBA because of his injuries.
Wow.
By the way, Maxi Kleber has been downgraded to out for the Mavs tonight.
That's fine. We know he's missing 40 games this year. So
this is number one.
All right. And then one more quick question for you guys. Do you think Giannis and Dame have found ways to connect in the offseason? I know we're only a few games in. I think
they are
1-2.
So you think they're texting each other?
I don't know, because it just didn't seem like they were on the same page last year.
Hey, this is two stars that have been stars on their team individually. And Dame was coming in trying to figure out, you know, how he fit into the equation, playing team ball, but also being in his own, like, isolation mode.
And by the way, when we hit the break, there is food in there because Gavin Dawson walked by with food in his mouth, giving us the thumbs up. It could have been about the Dame question. I think it was because of
it's
the food.
About food. He's like, it's good tasting food.
Is that courtesy of Two Skillets Catering?
That right is there? Correct.
There you go. Yeah, man.
Now,
I can smell it through the door,
baby. Look,
I have
it right
here. Smell it through the
because
door,
because I was like, hey, you guys cater for like kids like baseball, you know, or what? And they're like, yes. Yeah. So I was like, okay, well, this might be something we use later in life.
Wouldn't you guys all appreciate how locked in Mike still is, despite the fact that there's food.
Smells great, man.
It really does.
You can smell it in here.
Now,
okay,
it's time for Mike Likes It.
I'm surprised by this. I'm going to go to the World Series here for a minute. The Yankees are minus 155 tonight. That is a pretty big favorite for a team that's down 0-2 in a series.
That is true. Do you look back at game one? I know game one had plenty of ebbs and flows.
Yeah.
But do you look back at game one and be like, I know that's not how it turned out, but they should have won that game. And like, maybe they're like, it's even and it's going back to New York. You know what I'm saying? I'm trying to come up with ideas.
Obviously, you had a situation. The tough thing was you got to a point in the game where you had to bring in a starting pitcher.
You did.
And in relief, that always gets scary. And a starting pitcher who hadn't pitched in 37 days.
And by the way, if that amazing catch isn't made off of the Shohei swing, who knows?
Right. It was a foul ball, right? I mean, that was a great play. I was like, man, they cheered so long for Verdugo, or at least they have cheered for Verdugo in LA, and they're like, that's one of our guys making. And then obviously he has on a glove that's very cool. It's like a kind of a Mexican flag glove. He has on his shoes that are Mexican flag shoes. And then you had Fernando Valenzuela, which I thought, you know, they did a decent job of kind of, hey, we have 34 on the back of the mound. They had Oral Hershiser and I'm sorry, Yeager, Steve Yeager, I believe it is, if I'm getting that wrong. I'm sorry, the 81 World Series MVP, the 88 World Series MVP. You know, all I could say is, where's Corey Seager? You know,
good point.
Why didn't they have Corey Seager? Would that be weird, having an active player? If you're celebrating your World Series MVPs that are somewhat alive.
Probably a little
Where's Corey Seager at?
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Because he's a Texas right Ranger.
But he just won a World Series with the Rangers.
Yeah, but he didn't beat the Dodgers in the World Series. I get that. He took good out point. The Diamondbacks. All right, so I didn't get to this about the World Series. Ran out of time in Baseball Nuggets. I just think tonight we get the pinstripes. Tonight we get the grays and the Los Angeles across the jersey. I know, Corey, you want the Cowboys to do away with tradition at times.
Yeah.
I just think when you see the Yankees and Dodgers in their classic jerseys, they're not tricked up. They're not different from 1988 or 81 or 77, or I guess they're different from like the 50s because you'd have been the Brooklyn Dodgers. But I do love the historic, beautiful, plain, simple jerseys that we're seeing. And maybe I love it because everybody's tricking up so many things so much around baseball and basketball and football. Even hockey, that sometimes the classic looks so awesome because it's so different. Just having classic jerseys at this point is so different in our world.
Did the Rangers throw in their City Connect during the World Series?
No, they wore the blue jerseys, but the Rangers don't really have a classic jersey at all. And yeah, let's face it. They change every 3 to 5 years, which is fine. That's a lot of teams do that. The Mavericks don't have really a classic jersey. I guess you could go to the green jersey they had in the 80s or the white jersey they had in the 80s, but that lasted, 10 years? And then they started changing things up. But when you get two historic teams like this and then they don't try to jack it up, like, I'll give this example.
Those uniforms are pretty flawless the way they are anyway.
How awesome would it be in our world if when the Celtics and Lakers played each other, the Celtics just wore their white jerseys at home and the Lakers wore the purple jerseys on the road? And then when the Celtics go to LA this year, the Lakers just wear their yellow jerseys and the Celtics wear their green jerseys. Like, it would blow our mind. Like, oh my gosh, this looks like what I'm used to seeing a long time ago. But I don't know, has it been a decade or more since those teams wore their classic jerseys against each other? So I just appreciate that the Yankees and Dodgers are wearing the jerseys that we know them for and not turning on the television going, what are they wearing tonight?
So it makes it feel even more like historical for you.
Yes.
I like it.
So now I'll go to this. I really like that San Francisco went back to their 90s jerseys last night.
Okay.
The kind of black, I don't know, off-center kind of shading. I know it's your rival team, you hate them, and I'm not like in love with the 49ers or whatever, but I kind of like that they wore, I call them the Deion Sanders 49ers jerseys.
Yeah, I like those jerseys better. I will make this admission to you, and I think I'm in the minority on this. I'm not really a jersey guy. Like, I don't really care that much, but I think I'm in the minority on that.
I guess I liked that the Cowboys and 49ers look like it was the Cowboys and 49ers. We weren't iced out.
Did you like the graphics from NBC when they were talking about how great they used to be, and then they made the crashing sound before they are like, but neither team has won a Super Bowl in the last 28 years.
I guess I missed that, to be honest.
It seems like a graphic package.
I did hear Chris Collinsworth go, man, this league was decided forever with the Cowboys and 49ers, and he threw in the Packers. I was like, yeah, for 5 years of Jerry's life, they were in the mix. 92 to 96. After that, they've never been in the mix. But the 80s were pretty horrible for the Cowboys.
That is true.
81, everything changed, right? It was like Joe Montana and the 49ers and Bill Walsh took over the NFL from the Cowboys as the Cowboys owned the NFC in the 70s, then somewhat the 49ers owned it in the 80s, and then the Cowboys took it over from 92 to 95. And then that's been it for the history of Jerry Jones-led Cowboys. It's weird how we want to, I guess, because they're so popular, because they're on Sunday Night Football all the time, they're on Monday Night Football, we want to include this like long history of like Aikman and Emmett and Michael, and it's like, it was really 91 they came on the scene as a playoff team, 92, 93, and 95 they won the Super Bowl, 96 they're in the playoffs, and then from that point on, it just went to crap. Like, it was a, if you really think about it, it was a small part of Jerry Jones' ownership where they were actually like a competitive Super Bowl contender. They won three. It was awesome. They went to four NFC championships in a row very quickly in Jerry's ownership. And I give them a lot of credit for that. But from that point on, Chris Collinsworth last night made it sound like, boy, were the 49ers and the Cowboys running the league for a while. And I'm like, I don't think that's right, Chris. And by the way, I thought Chris Collinsworth, I'm a fan of his. I thought he did a horrible job last night as the color analyst.
What was the part you hated the most?
Well, at one point, he said that the Cowboys blitzed and watch Brock Purdy get lit up here, but he still makes the play. He never got touched. The Cowboys blitzed. He did get rid of the ball quickly. He never, like, you didn't even put a fingernail on Brock. And then he went back to it and said it again. I'm like, hey, Chris, we all make mistakes. I'm learning this job with the Texas Rangers. I will make a mistake on a replay. I will make a mistake on, I thought I saw this, and then I see the replay, and I didn't see it. But just say, oh, I thought he got hit. He ended up that the blitz ended up not getting to him, and he was able to deliver the ball with pressure but not get hit. But he was still like Brock Purdy's laying on the ground picking himself up from the ground. I'm like, he didn't have to pick himself up at all, Chris. He was never on the ground.
Yeah.
All right, so I want to go to the two plays to Tavonte Turpin, the two deep balls, one being an interception. Is that coming up on the show?
No. Okay. I was just going to say, can we play cut number 32 then? Because I think this is probably the play that has taken a lot more people's like focus.
At their own 25. Out of the gun, the snap is back. See, they give him time deep. Down the left side for Lamb. Over the shoulder. Couldn't hold it. Diamador Lenore stepped for him at the Niner 35.
And it was Turpin.
Oh, it was. Yeah. Beg your pardon, it was Turpin.
I just want to play that audio because we had a chance to play it and it fit really well.
So that was at the end of, I say the end of the game. That was at 2 minutes and change. They go deep. He is open. Not by a lot. He is open. It was a very good throw.
It was a great throw. I'm with you.
Here's what I couldn't tell. I didn't go back and watch it 72 times. I couldn't tell, did it hit his helmet first, then his hands, or then his hands helmet? I still was like, at first I thought it was helmet hands, but if you want to correct me, if you're on Twitch or you're watching on YouTube, you can say, no, it hit him in the hands and then the helmet. Nimrod, catch the ball. I will say this. I do agree with Nick Eatman. If you weren't listening earlier when he was on with Sean and RJ and Bobby, I watched that a few times on replay, like as they're replaying it. Now, maybe if he catches it, he works harder to get his back foot in bounds.
You were worried about whether
I don't
both
think
feet
he got
hit.
Both feet in. If he catches that clean, now maybe that foot is on the ground as he catches the ball and then it lifts up. That foot never gets back on the ground.
It looks like it hit his forearm.
Forearm, then helmet. Okay.
His helmet.
It was not an easy play, but you're hoping that you're an NFL receiver, you make that catch. Play. I would just say that I'm not sure his feet, if he catches it clean from the start, I'm not even sure if both feet would be considered inbounds. And obviously that play is going to get replayed. San Francisco has all three timeouts remaining, so they're going to challenge that because it was going to be so close. So I'm not even sure he gets his feet in if he makes the catch clean.
Yeah, his back foot, Lenore, it bumps into Lenore, and so it gets all thrown around high.
Yeah.
It does look like it wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah, so at least can you, if you're a Cowboys fan going, that would have been a catch. I don't think, thank you, Corey, for watching it right now again. I don't think his feet would have been in bounds even if he catches it clean. Now, maybe he works harder if he catches the ball.
Yeah, maybe so.
Maybe he works harder to get that foot down, but as he bobbled the ball and didn't catch it, he's not working to get that foot down.
Now, Mickey said something really interesting earlier to me. He's like, hey, look, Turpin's out there. Dak sees it and he goes for it. I'm not faulting that at all. I don't fault Dak. That was a great throw.
It really was a good throw by Dak. I will give him that credit.
But, Corey, you said something before the show.
Duke 22 wants me to stick with baseball. Does that mean he wants me to do all baseball segments?
Or is he saying he loves your baseball talk?
Okay.
You're also looking at what they described as a gadget guy coming in, getting a throw with the game, like, if not entirely on the line, almost on the line in that moment.
Granted, Brandon Cooks isn't on the field.
Yep.
Your depth has been tested.
For sure.
I'm not necessarily in that big of a moment looking Turpin's way. But didn't Turpin have a pretty significant fourth down grab?
He did.
Earlier in the game? Maybe he's been gaining Dak's trust more and more, but for me personally, that's not the option I'm going.
Can I go, because I know I'm running out of time here because we got to get to the C block, is the first one to Turpin down the sideline where Chris Collinsworth then is like, well, he got hit, this and that. Go watch that replay. At no point was Turpin ever open.
And the safety was all over.
And the safety was reading the play the whole time. So even if he throws it 5 yards further, Turpin did not beat the cornerback. And then two, the safety was hanging back there. He's just reading the ball in the air. He's either going to catch it if it's underthrown, which it was. I think the safety, at best, if you're a Cowboys fan, was going to knock it down if it's 5 yards further. He didn't, like, get there late. He was watching the whole play. He was double-teamed. So that Dak throw where they're like, boy, Bosa caused that interception. Yeah, he probably had a little bit to do with it. That ball was probably going to get intercepted or knocked down. There was, at no point, was that going to be a touchdown. He was double-teamed.
The KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, it's time for the C Block starring Corey Majors.
We dive into this weekend's hits and misses next on The Fan.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.